Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I am your host and tour guide, Yada. Each weekday morning, I strive to expose the beguiling and destructive myths associated with religion and politics, with patriotism and the media, with military and economic schemes. This morning, as you might suspect, we'll begin with economic schemes. If you listen, your eyes may be opened and you may ultimately change your mind towards some of these human institutions. Instead of merely presenting the news, our mission is to help you understand what is occurring behind the headlines, all while predicting how these events will shape our world over the next 20 years. Then, during our second hour, we're going to engage Yahweh, it's God's one and only name, on His terms by way of His one and only covenant, and through His still relevant and always dependable Torah, which means teaching, not law, so that with His guidance, you will be able to replace your religion with reason and engage in a relationship with Him. Our phone number, if you'd like to question, criticize, or affirm anything that is said on this program, is 877-300-7645. Well, late into the evening last night, the United States averted, this is, I'll read directly from the Reuters headlines, because I disagree with the headline. The United States averted economic calamity when lawmakers approved a deal to prevent huge tax hikes and spending cuts that would have pushed the world's largest economy off a fiscal cliff and into recession. So now we are so jaundiced that the media, which avoids making judgments at all cost. It is politically correct, and therefore it never wants to be judgmental in its headlines. It would avoid that for everything. Simply drive down the middle of the highway, report what they think is relevant, and not make a judgment over it. Not be discerning, not make a conclusion. Well, here's the headline, and it is rife with conclusions. So why is it that the media, who is deathly afraid of stating conclusions because of their uniform acceptance of political acceptance or political correctness, all of a sudden now judgmental? Is there something so jaundiced about this, so counterproductive, that those who would prefer socialist secular humanism be imposed would actually celebrate it? And indeed, that is the case. You see, the United States is not only in debt, $16 trillion. We're the largest debtor nation on earth. But we're adding to that debt at over $1 trillion a year. And the cuts that would have transpired if we had gone off the fiscal cliff would have been just a shade over $100 billion. I think it's $109 billion, approximately. And so, this idea of cutting the amount that we're adding to the aggregate federal debt, $100 billion, so that it is, say, $900 billion next year, as opposed to $1 trillion, was considered to be a calamity, a disaster that had to be avoided, something that would have put America into recession, that the only way America can avoid recession is to become more impoverished, to become a larger and larger debtor nation. That's the mentality. That's the conclusion here. As for the tax increases that would have gone into effect, they totaled $500 billion a year. Now, of that $500 billion a year, $540 billion of it is tax breaks that were given to lower and middle income Americans. Yes, 540 of what is, in essence, 500, or should I say 440 of what is essentially $500 billion in tax cuts. About 90% of it was given to lower and middle income Americans. And what the Bush era tax cuts did, and what those in Congress have just made permanent, is a removal of tens of millions of Americans from tax roles, so they pay nothing. They make no contribution whatsoever to the federal government. They are net parasites. And it means that the average American now has a nominal rate of about 5% on federal taxes. They pay too little for it to be meaningful. And that's going to be continued. So where revenue needed to be increased, where revenue could have been increased by almost $500 billion a year by people who pay either nothing or almost nothing, their tax rates were permanently left at this ridiculously low level. And the Americans that already pay 40 times more than their fair share, their tax rates were raised. The very people who could make investments in our economy that would create jobs, their money was confiscated. And all the while, in this vote, there wasn't one single aspect of government that was cut. Nothing. There weren't even any promises to cut the rate of increase in future government spending. Nothing. There is nothing the U.S. Senate, Congress, or this administration could have done that would have been more disastrous for America. Rather than avert economic calamity, they made it certain. Rather than keep from pushing America into recession, they made depression unavoidable. Now, this agreement, we are told by Reuters, hands a clear victory to President Barack Obama. Now, it's a clear victory in the sense that Barack Obama got exactly what he wanted. He flew in Air Force One, spending millions in taxpayers' money from his vacation in Hawaii, and immediately upon the passage of the bill, hopped back on Air Force One to burn millions of dollars of Jet A to go back to Hawaii. He won, at least in the short term. He won. He won re-election on a promise to address the nation's budget woes by raising taxes on the wealthiest Americans. Now, we don't pay tax on wealth in America. We pay tax on earnings. But the media doesn't seem to be able to get that because politicians don't tell the truth, and the media doesn't want to be discerning regarding language. But here's the reality. That increase of 4%, it's at 10% over the amount they currently pay, 35 to 39%. For Americans earning $450,000 or more, that tax increase has no chance of bringing in any more than about $60 billion a year. Now, that's if they are not deterred from investing. If they're not deterred in any way by having their tax burden go up and their ability to make the standard deductions that other Americans make deteriorate to nothing, if the largest wage earners can't put the pieces together, and they're utterly stupid, and they say, I don't care how much the government takes from me, I'm going to work just as hard, and I'm going to invest just as much, even though I'm not going to get the same return for my risk. If they're stupid, then the government brings in $60 billion more by increasing their tax. Now, the Laffer curve in past history would say that by increasing their tax beyond what is a reasonable level, they will actually invest less, the economy will slow, and that they will end up paying less because they're less productive. But even if those things aren't true, you're talking about a $60 billion increase in revenue when the problem is between $1 trillion and $1.4 trillion annually. What it tells you is that that issue is irrelevant. The problem isn't how much tax the wealthiest pay. The problem is how much we spend. It is irrelevant. This article goes on to say that Republican antagonists, so the Republicans are now antagonists, were forced to vote against a core tenet of their anti-tax conservative faith. Yes, religion and politics are the same animal. Spending cuts of $109 billion on military and domestic programs were only delayed for 2 months. So what they did is they just pushed that down the road. Now, this was considered to be catastrophic. $109 billion in military and domestic programs that were going to be cut if we went off the physical cliff. But here's the reality. We need to cut spending by over $1 trillion. Not by $100 billion, by $1 trillion, just to avoid adding to the existing deficit. Obama urged a little less drama when Congress and the White House next addressed the thorny fiscal issues like the government's mounting $16 trillion debt load. Yeah, we're at $16.4 trillion now, and by the time that he leaves office, we'll be at $20 trillion. There is a point of no return along that route, where our debt becomes unsustainable, where it becomes not only impossible to get countries to add to their holdings of dollars and to continue to invest in T-bills, but when you continue to do that, you continue to devalue your currency. And ultimately, that causes interest rates to rise. And ultimately, this $20 trillion in debt will result in interest payments of between $1 and $2 trillion a year. So even if we were to cut government spending by over $1 trillion, the rise in interest rates ultimately will eliminate that entire cut. And if we don't cut government, which is likely, our deficits, our annual deficits, will be twice the size they are now because of the service on the debt. It becomes unsustainable. Then rather than trying to get countries to pony up $1 trillion or $1.5 trillion, now we're begging countries for $3 trillion annually. And rather than adding $1 trillion here and there to our deficit each year, we're adding $3 trillion to our deficit each year. This is an extraordinarily sad situation that Americans ignorant of economics are celebrating. And when we return to Shattering Myths, we will continue to consider this report on the tragedy that occurred in Washington last night. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. You can join us by calling now 877-300-7645. We were talking about the problems associated with this bill that was passed both by the U.S. Senate, by Congress, and then signed into law by Barack Obama. It is a particularly amazing in this regard that everyone acknowledges that by increasing the taxes on the highest wage earners by 4%, taking them from 35 to 39%, undoing the benefit of the Bush-era tax cuts on them, but not affecting everyone else. If those people are stupid, they don't know that happened to them, and they continue to invest knowing that they're going to get a smaller return on the risk that they take in their investment. So if they're stupid, then the maximum potential gain by that tax increase is $62 billion a year. And yet the Congressional Budget Office, which is nonpartisan, said that the bill that was signed into law last night will actually increase deficit by $4 trillion over the next 10 years compared to the budget savings that would have occurred if the extreme measures of the eclipse of the cliff were to kick in. So, rather than, here's a nation that that is annualizing between $1 and $1.4 trillion in annual deficits. And rather than reducing the rate of increase of our deficit by $62 billion a year, which is what the tax increase on the most effective wage earners did, it will actually have a $400 billion negative influence each year. And so rather than reducing the deficit, that can't even say that, reducing the rate that the deficit grows by $62 billion, we're going to increase the rate the deficit grows by $400 billion each year over the next 10 years as a result of what happened in Washington. And yet, according to journalists, according to the White House, according to the pundits, we averted financial disaster by making the decision which increases our deficit by $400 trillion over the $400 billion, I should say, each year over the $1 billion or $1 trillion each year that we're already racking up in additional debt. We made it 40% worse, not better. It's stunning that we could be in that kind of a position and that Americans could routinely be this stupid. And you have to wonder, for Americans to be celebrating this, for Americans to have voted for this, for Americans to have wanted this, are they universally this stupid? I mean, it's, what other word is there? Ignorant of anything relative to economic and economic history and economic development? Are they that stupid, that ignorant, that unknowledgeable as it relates to economics, or are they just irrational? Or is really the issue a combination of those things and being immoral? Craving that which they do not have. Coveting that which others have. Thinking that it is moral not only to covet that which others have, but to want to take from those who have earned something so that they who have not earned it can enjoy the benefit. And in the so doing, make certain that the benefits of the country that have previously existed will not be enjoyed by their children. Committing economic pedophilia on their children. Why is it that the majority of Americans are bankrupt morally and support this very scam that went down in Washington last night? Another article reads, an up-and-down House vote on the Senate measure presented many Republicans with a nearly impossible choice. Now, the Senate measure, 92% of senators voted to do the worst thing in every possible way. Not to cut any form of government spending, to increase the tax rates on those who are already paying more than their fair share, and to make permanent the tax decreases that caused some 50% of Americans to pay no tax whatsoever, and average Americans to pay a nominal rate of about 5%. They did everything they could possibly do wrong. And 92% of senators supported this. And so now the House, because of gerrymandering by the Democrats, was forced on an up or down vote on the Senate bill, which was disastrous in every possible way. And they saw it as putting them into a corner for which they had no room to maneuver. One said, I've read the bill, and I can't find any spending cuts. Even with an electron magnifying glass, there are none. Good morning and welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. You can engage in this discussion by calling 1-877-376-45. There's another article on the fiscal cliff that's also by Reuters that I found interesting. It reads, in the controversy surrounding, and they put in quotes, the fiscal cliff. That was a term I've shared with you that was actually conceived by the International Monetary Fund about a year and a half ago. They wanted America to resolve this, not because it's in America's interest, but because it's in the International Monetary Fund's issue interest. It mirrors that which is being done in Europe. So the controversy surrounding the, in quotes, fiscal cliff issue, it's easy to forget that the origin of the entire debate was a professed desire to reduce swollen federal deficits. That was the only reason that there was a physical cliff, was because we recognize that as a nation we have been unable, because the electorate is so immoral, ignorant, irrational, to do the right thing in terms of our federal spending, the indulgences that we have lavished upon ourselves, as well as our grotesque military spending, because the populace is so immoral, irrational, and ignorant in this regard, so swept up in politics and in propaganda and in patriotism, so misguided that the politicians are afraid to tackle the issues for fear that they be swept out of office. And so we got the entire nation all emotional over this fiscal cliff, and everyone forgot that the entire debate had been on deficits, which is what's killing America. So this continues to read, whether the target was $4 trillion over 10 years, as proposed by the Bowles-Simpkins Deficit Reduction Commission, or in the $2 trillion range, as tossed about by House of Representatives Speaker John Boehner and President Barack Obama, the idea was to rein in a total debt that now tops $16 trillion. Yes, we are $16.4 trillion in debt. And if we had followed the Bowles-Simpkins Deficit Reduction Commission's suggestions, then 4 years from now, we would add $4 trillion to that, and we would be at $20 trillion. If we used instead the Bonner's and Obama's plan, we would be at $22 trillion. And if we use the existing plan, the way it is established now, we're going to be at closer to $24 trillion. The current plan is, let's do everything wrong. By those standards, the bill passed by the U.S. Senate and now Congress on New Year's Day to avoid the cliff's automatic steep tax hikes and across-the-board spending cuts looks pathetic indeed. The legislation, which as of Tuesday evening had was now passed in the House, adds nearly $4 trillion to the federal deficits over the next decade. So rather than resolve the increase to our deficits, it adds an additional $4 trillion. This is largely because it extends income tax rates cuts for every American except a relative small handful above the $400,000 threshold. It reminds me of something that just took place in France. You know, in France, Holliday, the socialist, he's actually a communist president, decided to do the same thing that Obama is doing, and for totally symbolic reasons, for class warfare reasons, to infer that the most effective wage earners, the largest wage earners, weren't paying their fair share, even though they were paying about 40 times per capita in tax what the average taxpayer is paying either in France or in the United States. That they weren't paying their fair share, when they aren't, they're paying 40 times their fair share. That if we just taxed them more, then everything would be fine and we'd continue to be able to lavish out all sorts of government-mandated indulgences on the populace. And so he raised the rate to 75%. Now, it was 75% on those making over 1 million euros, so that's about $1,200,000 annually. Well, you know how many people that was in the entire country of France? A little over 1,000. The number that you would increase revenue was so minuscule it couldn't be calculated, because they realized that by imposing it, those who were at wage earners at that level were mobile, and they would all just simply leave France. And so they realized that it was wholly symbolic. It was an act of class warfare, as is the case with communist and socialist leaders, that it had no influence whatsoever on the country's deficits or its economy, such is the case in America. It is strictly symbolic. I shared with you that I heard Dennis Miller back about a month ago say that, you know, if Congress were able to give on a silver platter a solution to the nation's deficit to President Barack Obama that did not include a tax increase on the highest wage earners, that he would oppose it. And that's the case. And that a plan that didn't do anything to reduce the deficit and instead increases it by 40% annually, but does increase the tax on the most successful Americans, he signed with glee and hightailed it out of town, flying Air Force One back to Hawaii. That is how far we have fallen as a people. The other reason that the Congressional Budget Office says that we have exacerbated our problem as opposed and done so in a very severe way. We've exacerbated our deficit problem by 40%. Is because it put off at least for 2 months and probably permanently the automatic budget cuts that were part of the cliff that would have saved about $109 billion in federal spending on defense and non-defense programs alike. You know, American conservatives are all in a twit over we can't, sacrifice any spending on defense. And it's always rally around our troops and those are our true heroes. And it's a bunch of nonsense. You know, America hasn't fought for American freedom in a very, very long time. And it's hard to even make an argument that our troops have ever fought for the independence and freedom of America. If they were fighting for America and independence, they would be here, not there. But beyond all of that, if you wanted to make America such that it could never be invaded and occupied, simply honor the provisions of the Second Amendment. And it becomes impossible to invade and occupy America by any foreign nation. So it's not about defense. It's about control mechanisms and spending mechanisms and the myth of patriotism and the like that is part of our defense mentality. But here's the reality. America, between defense and intelligence gathering, which is just trying to gain information on perceived foes, outspends the rest of the world combined. Our primary export these days is things that kill. We're the warmongering country in the world now. We're a military state. And so it is in this, from this perspective, that we need to realize that America is vastly safer if we were to cut the U.S. military by 50% or more. We can't afford the military that we have, and we don't need it. It is actually counterproductive to what is in the best interest of America. And yet, the Republicans won't cut it a dime, and the Democrats won't cut their beloved social programs, Medicare and Medicaid, Social Security a dime. And so there we are. We continue to be a out-of-control economic disaster. The Senate bill, which ultimately came down to a fight over tax equity, this article says, tax equity. So it's equitable from a tax point of view to have half of Americans pay no tax at all. That's equitable. It's equitable from this point of view to have the middle class in America pay essentially no tax with a nominal rate of about 5%. So that 1% of Americans can shoulder the bill. That's equitable. So in the Senate and also now in the Congress, because it's the exact same bill, the fight was about tax equity rather than the federal spending. All it did was make the problem worse and kick the can further down the road to a later date. In explaining the measure to the news, the White House, which helped broker it, gave no particular figure for how much it would bring down the deficit, stating only that somehow with a strengthening economy it would. Well, the Congressional Budget Office has already told us how much it would bring down the deficit by increasing it $4 trillion. It's the new math, I guess. Whether it ultimately succeeds will depend on part, this article says, on what happens to the now-delayed automatic spending cuts, including whether Obama follows through on reductions and outlays. He has made no promises in reductions and outlays. In fact, that was what was brought off the table. And in fact, even Republicans don't have any appetite for it. No one on Capitol Hill has an appetite for the courage to do the right thing. We are a nation adrift. It's why God says, walk away from your country. It's the first requirement of the covenant. It's why he does not want us dependent upon these human schemes. Speaking of human schemes, this also from Reuters, gunmen ambushed and killed 6 Pakistani women, murdered them in cold blood. They were all aid workers. They did so yesterday. They worked for a charity, and they said that the fundamentalist Muslims murdered them because they were somehow incorrectly linked to those providing polio vaccines. You see, Muslims are so lost in space, so incapable of reason, so utterly foolish. They have been convinced by their religious leaders and their political leaders that when the world provides vaccines against deadly diseases like polio, that they're actually poisoning their children, that they're spying on their children, that they're trying to destroy Islam by providing polio vaccines. Well, the vehicle that these healthcare workers are riding in was destroyed. They were burned alive. Another example of Islam. After having covered the grotesque malfeasance of the United States Senate and Congress, as well as the President of the United States, in destroying the very country that they were sworn to serve, after covering the story on how the most fundamentalist Muslims in Pakistan decided to hunt down and murder aid workers that were trying to protect their children from disease, I'd like to turn to a story on the United Nations because it is no less corrupt. Not much commentary is going to be needed on this story. I'll just try to share with you the evidence as it has become known to us. This is from the BBC. A former United Nations police officer, she happens to be an American, is suing a British security firm over claims that it covered up the involvement of her fellow officers in sex crimes and prostitution rackets in the Balkans. Catherine Bolovac, an American policewoman, was hired by Dynacorp Aerospace for a UN post aimed at cracking down on sexual abuse and forced prostitution in Bosnia. Now, this is interesting for two reasons. One is the United States' involvement in the Balkans, UN's involvement there. That is where we're going to find the Antichrist coming. He is going to, in all likelihood, be a Macedonian and is all likelihood going to unite several of the now shattered countries that have formed the new fabric of the Balkans. And Bosnia is the place where Muslims united with Adolf Hitler to form the Waffen SS units, and it is the Bosnian Muslims that allied with Roman Catholic Ustasi Croats to murder 800,000 Christians. And so it is in this region that we find Islam doing some of its most sinister work, but Islam in league with Roman Catholicism and socialist secular humanism. And prostitution, of course, is one of the telltale signs of Islam. Now, she claims that she was appalled to find that many of her fellow officers who were hired by the United Nations were involved in the sexual trafficking. She was fired by the British company after amassing evidence that the UN police were taking part in trafficking of young women from Eastern Europe as sex slaves. So the UN was hired, was brought in here to diminish the prostitution and the sex slave trade And rather than diminish it, they participated in it. It's very much like the United Nations going into Lebanon, ostensibly to keep Hezbollah disarmed and to keep Hezbollah from attacking northern Israel, when in fact they became a weapons conduit for and a protective force on behalf of Hezbollah. Same thing is true here. Rather than protecting religious terrorists, they're now aiding and abetting in the slave trade of young women. She said, this is the woman who is the whistleblower. When I started collecting evidence from the victims of sex trafficking, it was clear that a number of UN workers were involved from several countries, including quite a few from Britain. I was shocked. I was appalled. I was disgusted. They were supposed to be over there to help, but they were committing these crimes themselves. When I reported it to my supervisors, they told me to go away. In fact, they fired me. DynaCorp has the contract to provide police officers for the 2,100-member UN International Police Force that, by the way, America is paying for, in Bosnia, which was created to help restore law and order after the Civil War. Yes, we sided with the Muslims. As well as reporting that her fellow officers regularly went to brothels, she also investigated allegations that an American police officer hired by DynaCorp had hired his own sex slave for $1,000. Volkovec's British lawyers say her evidence will highlight how the underground sex trade in Bosnia is thriving among 21,000 NATO peacekeepers and thousands of international bureaucrats and aid workers. By the way, for those who are keeping track here, yes, I said 2,100 the first time and 21,000 the second time. That's how it appears in the article. My guess is that it is 2,100 NATO peacekeepers that are participating in the sex slave trade. Many of the hundreds of women working in Bosnia's sex industry are lured with promises of jobs as waitresses, but then delivered to brothel owners who confiscate their passports. Volkovec claims that DynaCorp officers forged documents for trafficked women, aided in their illegal transport through border checkpoints into Bosnia, and then tipped off the sex club owners about potential raids. The story goes on, and as the story continues, what we find is that the United Nations knew this was occurring and did nothing to stop it. They're as complicit in this as Roman Catholicism is in priestly pedophilia. I'm Yada. This is Shattering Myths.
A little over a year ago, I began to do a lot of research into why, even though I had a pretty good-sized meal, that I was still starving. And my research led me to a well-known fact.